as we were walking over the bridge, we heard another explosion. We thought it was a third a bombing explosion, and it ends up that the police were detonating another bomb safely, but we didn't know that at that point.
Welcome to the Runners Connect Run to the Top podcast, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. So together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now, here's your host, Tina Muir.
Hello, this is Tina Muir. Thank you so much for being with me today for the latest episode of the Runners Connect Run to the Top podcast. Last week, we talked to Coach Jamie Dodge, who is one of the Runners Connect coaches, and she shared her story about overcoming Hashimoto's and how having a running coach changed hers and will change every runner's life. It's really worth listening to. So if you didn't check it out yet, make sure you go back after this episode and check it out. So today we have a raw and especially inspiring episode as we talk with Julie Benson. So many of you may not have heard of Julie, but you probably will want to keep in touch with her after this episode. I think we can all remember where we were when we heard about the Boston bombings. It's something that really shook the running world to the core. But in the end, we kind of proved that it made us stronger. And that's just something that I love about our community. Julie was at mile 25.8 when the bomb went off, having a slower day than she hoped. And we all know just how much feeling a little bit off can take minutes off your time in a marathon. So really is kind of close to heart here. She also shares her story about how she overcame an eating disorder, which is something a lot of people have requested to hear more about. She's a brave and just such a wonderful person that I know you're going to love her and really have another reminder of just how wonderful our running community is in this episode today. So without further ado, let's go meet Julie. Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast, Julie.
Thank you so much, Tina. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you and hear about your story. This is going to be a great one, I can already tell. So let's start with the basics. You work full time. You have two sons. You have a husband who is in the part of a SWAT team. You know, pretty intense there. A busy lifestyle, obviously, which many of our listeners can relate to. How do you manage to fit your training in?
Well, it definitely takes a lot of flexibility and a lot of compromise with my family, who they're amazing and very supportive. I like to do a lot of my runs, which I call ghost runs, and I think I've heard that term before, trying to get them in before my family wakes up. A typical day for me would be waking up around after 4 a.m., and I try to get out the door by 4:30, 4:40 a.m., and I'll do a run and try to be home by 6 a.m. when my boys tend to wake up. So that's my typical week as far as the early morning runs, and then the weekends, it's some juggling there too with my family.
Yeah. So I've heard of a lot of mother runners doing that kind of thing, getting up early. And just a side question that just came into my mind, do you ever feel like unsafe when you're out there at that time in the morning? Or is it kind of like there's a group of runners that are out at that time of the day and you kind of all give each other the nod because you know what you're doing?
No, that's a great question, and one I've actually had some important conversations with my husband and other runner friends. I always run with a pepper spray. It's one of those strap-on ones, and I stay on roads where there are houses. I'm very well lit. I'm lucky that the police department, I always seem to see a cruiser around, and I try to meet up with some friends in the early mornings when I can. But I'm always hypervigilant. I'm always alert, and I'm very mindful of where I choose to run.
Okay. So, yeah, I think that's something that is important. And, you know, as someone who has the luxury of kind of running whenever I want, it is something I kind of take for granted, but something that I just wondered about. And that's good advice with the pepper spray. And I've also heard of people taking an alarm with them in their hand. I went to a running retreat earlier in the year called Rise Run Retreat, and we were given a bag of goodies and pepper spray and an alarm were two of the things we were given, which I thought were great for female runners. So then how do you, this is just a question I've kind of wondered about with a lot of mother runners, is how do you keep your, you know, you said that you juggle with your family and their priorities and stuff, but how do you keep your family as the priority? As I could imagine, I don't know if it's just me and my young kind of selfish life with me and my husband, but how do you not let your running kind of take over your life and kind of everything else falls aside?
Well, I make sure that if there's something important, like one of my boys has a football game or there's a family event, that does take priority. But what I try to do is put all of my runs actually in my calendar. My husband and I have a joint calendar, and I talk to him a day or two before, and I'll ask him, you know, will this work for you? Do you mind if I'm gone between, you know, 7 and 9 on a Sunday? So we talk it out, but my family is priority, but they also know that I'm a better mom and wife when I get those runs in. I'm much happier and much
I think a lot of people can relate to that. When we don't get our runs in, we're kind of cranky, and loved ones can almost encourage you to get out the door. If you're going to be grumpy for the rest of the day, it's worth losing you for an hour to make you happier.
Absolutely, they feel that way. It's more about them trying to schedule things around when I can get my run in.
Yeah, definitely. And it sounds like organization is the biggest key here. And, you know, someone listening who is just kind of maybe coming into that organization and kind of planning ahead is the best thing to be able to do.
Absolutely. Like, the communication, my husband knows how important it is to me. He knows if I have a race coming up, he knows what the training schedule looks like. And I'll ask him, you know, if I do a marathon in the spring, are you cool with me, you know, having some real long runs around this time frame? Mm-hmm. So it does well around them too.
Yeah, definitely. So, that's great. Yeah. Okay, so I kind of want to go into the meat and potatoes of the podcast here, and something that, you know, I know our listeners are going to be really interested to hear about. The Boston Marathon 2013 was, you know, shook the whole running community all over the world, really. But you had an especially close encounter with it, and I kind of wanted you to share your story, and then we'll talk about it just a little bit more. So do you want to tell us what happened? From your perspective.
Yeah, so I can kind of jump right in to where I was stopped. Does that sound like, you know, a good place to begin?
Sure.
So I was running, and I was not running a great time. I didn't fuel properly. I was, I think, too excited about being at Boston for my first time. So I was seeing friends and family and stopping and waving. And I was also running for the Sandy Hook PTO, which the tragedy in Sandy Hook, Newtown, Connecticut, had happened just a few months before. So I decided I wanted to raise money to help support the community and the school. So I was wearing the Sandy Hook shirt and colors, and had raised quite a bit of money to support them. And that's where my heart and mind was during that entire run. And while I was running, I know I was at mile 25.8 because that's what my Garmin had said. Everything just took it was like everything just stopped. I think I remember almost running into the person in front of me. We were in these corrals where the spectators were on the outside. And it was just very confusing. I had been running about 4 hours, and I was just confused. I thought maybe, you know, someone had had a heart attack or there was a brief emergency, and everyone around me was, there was such a mix of emotion. Some people were angry, some people were confused. But as we stopped and waited, it was very clear to us that something very serious had happened.
So they just stopped you like right in the middle of the road. There was people there like no further.
Exactly. Okay. Like literally I was running and I was suffering. I wasn't having a great race. And it was, at first I was just confused. I thought the person in front of me had tripped but literally it was like we had just all were like sardines. We were jam packed in these little corrals. And within minutes, you know, we heard the helicopters and the emergency vehicles. Police cars were trying to push around us. Everyone started to get really escalated, really upset. People were kind of starting to go the other direction. I still had no clue what had happened. I figured if there was some kind of emergency, I knew that I needed to get out of the corral because I had this vision of getting, you know, like a car running me over. Like it started to pick up and get a little chaotic. So I snuck out of the corral and figured, you know, right now finishing the race is probably not going to happen. I need to let that go and really figure out what do I need to do to be safe and figure out what's going on. So, yeah. So then, go ahead.
No, you keep going with your story.
So I went and my body started to shut down. I really, like I said, wasn't fueling properly. I wasn't like drinking. I didn't have a phone. I didn't have food. I didn't have water. It was chilly out at that point. And I started shivering and my body got really cold. And I just kind of stumbled over to a sidewalk and sat down. I saw people trying to get on their phones and to call just to say, you know, we don't know what's going on. But I think at that point we had heard some rumors of a bomb at the end of the, towards the end of the race, which was just a few minutes ahead of us. And there was a guy sitting next to me who seemed to have his phone working. And I asked him, do you mind if I call my husband? I just want him to know I'm okay. So it took a few tries and I got through and I said, I texted my husband, Eric, and I said, I'm okay. I'm okay. I'll figure it out. And he wrote, congratulations. He thought that I finished the race. And because what happened was people who were tracking me, everything shut down. So they thought that, you know, it's a little over 4 hours. Julie must have finished. He gets my text saying, I'm okay. So he had no idea. And then I lost contact with him. And then at that point, as I said, as minutes were going, it was just becoming louder and more chaotic. And I remember thinking, almost dissociating and being like, what should I do? Like, I'm alone. Thank God my husband and kids are at home. We had gone back and forth about that and decided that I was going to do this on my own. And I just said, I need to just to get out of here. I need to keep myself safe and I need to not freak out. I need to stay calm and I need to get out of here, out of the city. And I was so fortunate that the guy who lent me the phone, he had said to me, you know, I have a car. It's about a 2 mile walk. I'm going to stop at this restaurant to find a buddy of mine. But if you want to come with me, you know, you're welcome to. And, you know, the one part of me is like, do I go with this stranger, like crazy guy, possible stranger, or is this my one chance to get out? So I took the risk and I walked with him. As we were walking over the bridge, we heard another explosion. We thought it was a third a bombing explosion, and it ends up that the police were detonating another bomb safely. But we didn't know that at that point. So we ended up at the restaurant, and it was like a bar. And it was the first time that I saw what actually had happened at the end. Everything, it was TV screens everywhere, and it was smoke and blood and chaos. And we just stood there and shivering and just staring, like speechless. I asked them if I could borrow their phone. And then at that point, I was able to have a longer conversation with my husband and say, you know, I'm okay. Meanwhile, he had located my sister, who I thought might have been at the finish line. I had seen her at the top of Heartbreak Hill, where she gave me a hug and said, you know, it's all downhill from here. I'll see you at the finish. And but he was able to get in touch with her. She had gotten stuck in a subway underground. And he said, I want you to go home with this guy. His name is Joe. And I will meet you at his house. So I did, and I went home with him and his buddy, and they took me home to his family, and I got this big, huge hug from his wife and his mother. And that was the first time I cried, and I just kind of figured, like, it just had come to terms of what had happened and that I was okay. And Joe handed me a beer, and I was like, "All right, you know, this is sort of like we're okay now." And then my husband came and got me, and he hugged Joe, and my husband, he cried in his arms. And I've never seen my husband cry much, maybe two or three times. He's a big tough guy. And I just sort of, it was interesting to see, you know, just everyone's emotion was starting to come out at that point.
So. Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for sharing. I mean, I'm sure that even to this day, it probably still brings back some memories for you and is difficult to talk about. So thank you for sharing with us about that. And it just goes to show, you know, at the time, you, like you said, you were frustrated and kind of annoyed at yourself for running slower than you hoped. And it kind of really puts things into perspective for us, because a lot of the time, you know, if we're not on pace, we're like, oh, what is wrong with me? I'm so, you know, you get so angry at yourself. But that kind of thing, that could have saved your life, you know, that you it just goes to show again that, you know, we love running and running is a part of us and it's for us and it helps us. But at the end of the day, like, it's just running. And, you know, you must have had that reality check that day.
Absolutely. And, you know, I definitely went through a lot of emotions, not just that day, but for months and months after. You know, it was a mix of of guilt, you know, like guilt that I didn't get to cross that finish line, that I'd worked, you know, four long, cold months to get there. It was, you know, relief. It was sadness. It was shock. It was anger. There was so much that, you know, it just sort of to experience. And I was really fortunate to connect with a lot of other runners who didn't get to finish. There was even a Facebook page created called 5700, which represented approximately the 5700 runners that didn't cross the finish line. So finding that support group and some really special people through there definitely helped cope through that year following.
Yeah, and I can imagine, I mean, you don't have to talk about this if you don't want to, but you said about, you know, the frustration with not crossing the finish line. I could imagine, you know, once that kind of feeling passed and you moved on to, you know, like you said, a different emotion, did you feel guilty for even thinking that with what had happened? Like, you don't have to talk about this, but I would imagine you feel like, how can I even be thinking about crossing a finish line when, you know, this happened? Did you kind of experience that?
Absolutely. And I think that it took other people to say that to me. It's okay to feel disappointed for yourself. You know, yes, that was a huge tragedy. And that's where 99% of my focus was for the sadness and grief of these family and these people who lost someone special or who had witnessed visually what had happened. I mean, if I had seen, you know, what thousands of, you know, hundreds of other people had seen, you know, I really was so fortunate. So I needed, I think, a few people to say, you know, that aside, you didn't get to cross that finish line. You were like a few minutes away, you know, that was taken from you too. And I think it took a while for me to verbalize that and say, you know what, I do feel guilty. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I do feel disappointed and I feel guilty for feeling disappointed, but I really worked through that. And I think, again, that support group where other people felt that way too, you know, it was like permission that we could feel a lot of different things. And
Absolutely.
That was okay.
And that's really great that you did find that. And I'm sure the race in general meant a lot to you, especially because you were already doing it for a cause that was, you know, the Sandy Hook children. You said that was the reason you were running. And, you know, I'm sure that was a conscious decision for you on that day. That was something that was important to you of the reason you chose that. And then, you know, having another tragedy kind of hit you, that must have been something that hit you especially hard.
Yes, definitely.
And so what about Joe? Are you still friends with him? Do you still like keep in touch? And, you know, do you think this is something that maybe one good thing that has come out of this is, you know, your friendship with him and his family?
Absolutely. Joe and I definitely kept in touch very closely the days following. We checked in on each other. He had actually gone back the next day to get some of his materials and to get a finisher's medal. And he said to me, I got you one. And when you're ready, I want to give it to you. I think that was really hard for me to want to take it because I felt like, well, I didn't cross that finish line. But, you know, he just said, well, let me hold on to it. So, no, we talked for a while. And actually, over the so that was in April. I don't think I saw him again in person till close to the summer, maybe May or June, but his whole family came up, his children too, and they came for lunch one day. And it was awesome. And I have a picture with him holding the medal that he gave me. The other thing that he and I did together that was really, really healing was that that November, I took a day off from work and we went into the city together. We went to where we were stopped and we ran the last like quarter mile together. So it was really great. And I think it got some of my own anxiety out about, you know, I wouldn't go back into Boston after that. And I lived maybe less than an hour from Boston, but I just didn't want to go there. And so I did it with him and we ran and hugged each other and we're like, we did it, you know?
That's so special. That was that is great. Then, so you've said, you know, you struggled with different emotions, but did you find running difficult afterwards? I mean, I would imagine it's a little bit scary thinking about running, knowing, you know, you were that close to it, or did you kind of find that running became a comfort for you?
For me, running became a comfort, actually. We had there was a race 2 weeks later. It was actually in honor of a police chief in our area that was killed. And they had it was a 5K race in his honor. And I said to my husband, I go, I'm going, we're going to do this. And it was, like I said, just 2 weeks later. And as I was putting my race bib on, everything started to spin around and I couldn't breathe. And I looked at my husband and I said, I think I'm having a panic attack. I've never had one before. I'm a counselor, a mental health counselor, so I know kind of what the signs were, and I was able to pinpoint that I was having one, and I knew that it was going to end, sort of know about the climax, and then it's going to decrease and just stay calm. And he kind of, my husband brought me over to a corner, and I breathed, and I was like, I didn't even see that coming. You know, he's like, you don't have to run this. But he also said, you are around SWAT officers and police from all over. He goes, you are safe. And I was like, okay. So he gave me a big hug, and I went to the starting line, and I ran my heart out that race. Aww. It was a 10K race, and I felt so good after when I crossed that finish line. So that was hard. But I think once I got past that, I really found a lot of comfort in running and with races too.
And did a lot
again.
Of the other people in the support group kind of find the same thing?
There was such a mix. There were a lot of people who said like they would run a quarter mile and start crying, or they couldn't run again, and then there was the other extreme where, you know, it was probably, you know, a lot of running, and that they found that comfort as well. So definitely a huge spectrum that I heard
definitely.
About.
So then the next year you had Your Buds came along, I hope I'm saying that right, and they had their Never Stop campaign. So can you kind of tell us about what that was and if that's still going?
Absolutely.
Or just some information about it?
Sure. And if you don't mind me backing up one just a little bit at that week after Boston happened. So Monday was the Boston Marathon, and then they were still searching for the second suspect. So Friday, it was in Watertown, Massachusetts. The entire town of Watertown was put into lockdown. So police and SWAT and, were going around to houses and making sure people were staying inside and going in their basements, because they had pinpointed where the second suspect was. I'm watching this on the news, but trying not to watch too much. And then my husband was at work on that Friday, and then he sent me a text. He said he knew he couldn't call me because I would probably freak out. So he sent me a text saying, our SWAT team's been activated and we're going into Watertown. So at that point, I really was like, please don't go. Don't leave me. I mean, I was such a range of emotions that week. I mean, I was crying, like loading my dishwasher. My kids, who were, you know, much younger then, were like, mommy, why do you keep crying? It was really hard to kind of manage myself a little bit. And so when he told me he was going in with his team, it was almost like my own resilience skills were so minimal at that point. But you know, he went, and I had this wonderful friend who came up with her children and a bottle of wine, and she brought a pizza, and she's like, I'm staying with you. And it was the best comfort I could have asked for. And we watched a little bit on the news, but I also was trying not to pay attention because I didn't want my kids to see any of it. They had pretty much no clue what was going on. But the good news is that evening, he returned home, and no one else was hurt, and they got the bad guy. So, that was sort of the connection between him and I, you know, as far as that I started this race and he kind of helped to be part of the finish of it.
I mean, you are tied to this story in all kinds of ways, and it's just just amazing to hear and how you've overcome this, and you know, you've kept inspiring and kept moving people forward. So, if you could share with us about the Never Stop campaign.
Sure. So I became friendly with this this runner, Ryan Pauly, and he had started this petition for all the runners who couldn't cross the finish line to be able to finish. And it went viral. I mean, I think it was, you know, within a few days, it was maybe, you know, 10,000 people across everywhere where people were signing it. So he got contacted by Your Buds, which is they make these great headphones, these earbuds. And they had told him, you know, I want you to select three other runners that couldn't finish the race, and we'd like to sponsor the four of you. So Ryan surprised me. He's like, I'm going to be calling you on this day. Just be ready at 2 o'clock. And I said, okay. So on the phone was him and then one of the, the employees from Your Buds, and just said that they liked, I think Ryan submitted maybe 10 people's stories, and he did this all on his own independently. And they liked, my story, with my husband's connection to it. So, they basically, it was myself, it was Ryan, it was this woman, Erica, who has cerebral palsy, and she, you know, was stopped. And then this woman, Ginger, who literally was within, I think, you know, yards or meters of the finish line, the bomb went off, she turned around and had to go hide, like run away. So pretty amazing stories there. And so they paid for our race bib to go. They paid for two nights hotel in Boston. They took really good care of us. They gave us a lot of awesome swag and earphones. They had us, they took us, made us a nice dinner in Boston two nights before the race. And then they were there on race day. So they were just there to have us tell our story and to basically send the message, you know, we're strong, resilient runners, and we are coming back. And by the way, the petition worked. So we, all the runners who couldn't cross the finish line were granted entry again so that we could finish that race. And it was such an amazing experience to return with these other members of the Yearbuds team, but just with all these runners that I had talked to for almost a year. And we met in Boston Garden, and we're all hugging and taking pictures and seeing each other for the first time in person from all over the country and world. And we really, it was just that strength that got us back to the finish line, and each one of us finished.
Absolutely.
So it was pretty amazing.
Is the true, it shows that, you know, runners are stronger than this, and, you know, everyone could have used it as a, oh, I don't know if I want to do a race like that again. But, you know, everyone showed that, like you said, you weren't going to be stopped and never stop and keep going. And it was, that's fantastic to hear. And, you know, thank you to your buds, and thank you to Ryan for, you know, getting that together and kind of getting that moving along. That's great. And have you found that, music in general has been helpful for you? Were you a music listener before, or have the kind of headphones, you've listened to it more since you've had them?
Yeah, I love them. They're actually, they're great. They really don't fall out, and they're good for the sweaty runs too and the rainy runs. But I've always been, I know that it's very controversial, but I am I love music when I'm running, except when I run with friends, you know, or my run club. We do a lot more talking, but I do love music. So that's great.
Okay, so now we're going to completely switch directions and go to something else, which unfortunately for you was traumatic in your life, but it's something that is very important to talk about. And I've been talking for a while about bringing someone on the show who does have experience with this. And so that is that you actually had an eating disorder for most of your teenage years. And as most of us who either know someone who has been through it, in which case I have quite a few of those, but it's, or you have been through it yourself, we know that it's very difficult to overcome, and it's something, you know, it's not a conscious choice, and it's something that often requires something in your life that you choose to make it change, make that click that makes you want to do something about it. So can you kind of share your story of what happened with you, and you know, what made it, what was the click for you?
Absolutely. So, you know, earlier in my childhood, there were circumstances that I think definitely set me up for being more vulnerable to eating issues. I would say around the age of 10, I started to become, you know, develop an unhealthy relationship with food, and have a more of a poor self-image. And around, I would say even 11 or 12 was when I started to engage in really unhealthy behaviors. I was, you know, experimenting more, you know, with the not eating, starvation, but more so was the bulimia, was the, you know, not even overeating, but just sort of the, you know, inducing myself to, you know, to vomit. And I was so young, and I guess I didn't really know. I actually thought that I had invented it, to be honest. It wasn't like somebody told me about it or I watched a show. It was just, I think I was in such a bad place, a difficult place. And it was the one thing that made me feel better. And I know a lot of people who don't have an experience with eating disorders or feel like they read about it, but they, or they make an opinion, they do think it's very much like an intellectual thing. Like, well, you're not fat, so why would you do that? Or like, it's a very clear cut. And unfortunately, it's much more complicated. You know, it's really not about the food. Sometimes not even about the body image. It's more about the emotions behind it and what drives someone to have to do or feel like they have to do that. So through my early teen years, you know, it was a very secretive thing for a little while. But soon my family definitely caught on that something was suspicious. And, you know, I went to therapy, and that didn't really work. And I even was hospitalized on two different occasions to try to get myself kind of back on track. And I would say that that really did help, you know, kind of trying to get more to the source of where the issues were, you know, why it had, maybe the driving force behind it, trying to deal with that versus just the stopping engaging mm-hmm. in that behavior. So things got better for a little while, but I think I was just still so fragile and my resilience was low. So if there was an event in my life that happened, like maybe a boyfriend breaking up with me, it would be like my go-to of a coping mechanism.
Sorry, I just want to pause you. Would you say it was more like the control? Like I've heard people saying that, you know, when they're stressed and things are going on in their life, it was something they could control. And like what you just said about like, you know, a boyfriend or whatever it may be, that was something you could control.
Yeah. It sounds very like counterintuitive, but it made me feel better. Instead of making me feel worse, it was like, okay, now, yeah, maybe I have this control back or I'm so angry, but now I have this relief. And it gave this sense of like relief and that, okay, now here's my reboot. And I'd always say, okay, I'll never mm-hmm. do that again. You know, it was always like, that's not good. What am I doing to my body? I need to stop. Let's get back on track. And, or I would say this one more time, almost like an addict might say one more time, one more drink, one more. And I'd say, okay, this last time. And I swear, you know, I'm not going to do that again. So, you know, unfortunately, you know, it was back and forth. Sometimes I'd go maybe months without doing it. And then there would be a rough patch and I would, engage in those behaviors again. And then, you know, I went to college and college is just an overwhelming mix of new experiences anyway. And I would say that it was better. But again, I would kind of be playful in this like very, in these awful behaviors. Like it was like something I wanted to let go and I wanted to stop, but I really didn't feel like I had the skills or the coping mechanisms to do that at that point. But I did continue on with counseling, you know, on and off through my life. And then in my 20s, you know, it was, things got better. And I, you know, I'm trying to think of how to say how it kind of went away. And I think what I need to say is that it doesn't go away. Like, I don't think like I was completely cured of it. Do I engage in those behaviors now? No. Do I think disordered thinking sometimes? Yes. So, you know, for an instance, like when I ran my first marathon, my best friend Lauren actually reminded me of this. I ran and I was so proud of myself. And I remember saying to her, I'm going to get a cheeseburger after that. And now that's something I wouldn't normally eat. I'm going to get a cheeseburger and I'm going to enjoy it. And I'm going to get French fries with it because I'm going to run, a marathon. And my husband had to go to work that night. I was home with my kids. I remember doing takeout and it was in front of me and I only ate half of it. And I couldn't eat the other half, not because I couldn't. It was almost like this, like the brakes were on. And it was like, I just wasn't there yet. And I remember thinking, how come I can't eat this cheeseburger? I just ran 26 miles, 2 miles. And why can't I eat this cheeseburger? So, you know, I want to be really genuine, you know, and the people out there listening that, no, I wouldn't say I'm not, you know, throwing up anymore or overeating and, you know, but what I've done is I've really just sort of, hushed those voices and hushed the negative talk. And I've found a way to cope and live that works for me. So, you know, I'm better now at eating cheeseburgers than I was 4 or 5 years ago, you know, but I have to be really mindful of like, you know, when we go to a restaurant, I'll be the one to look at a menu ahead of time and just say, okay, yep, there's stuff on there that I'm comfortable ordering. Or, you know, if I know I'm going to a party that night, I'm very thoughtful and mindful of what I'm eating that day to prepare myself. And maybe a lot of people would say, well, that's really healthy. That's a good way to be. That's how people keep their weight off. And that's true for me. And there's another layer. And it's just to kind of keep the anxiety down and make sure that I'm setting myself up for success. There are days that I've eaten too much and I will obsess in my mind a little bit about it and talk my husband's ear off a little bit. But that's what I need to do, I think, just to be like, to process it. And then I move on. So, you know, I struggled for like a third of my life with that, but I definitely feel like I'm in a place where I've got it more in control and that I'm still working on it, but in very, it's still little voices, mm-hmm. you know, or I have to kind of really be, sort of push it in the right place and, you know, and, be just take care of myself all
Absolutely.
Around.
And I think, I think that's very brave of you to even share, especially with right now, you know, what you still think about. And to be totally honest, like those thoughts you were talking about, some of them, I have the same thing. And I'm sure almost everyone listening, if they're real with themselves, has those kind of thoughts, especially, you know, if you know you have maybe, you know, a lot of days out coming, or like, you know, a lot of people know I just went on my honeymoon a few months ago and I really let myself go, eat whatever I wanted. And, you know, coming back after that honeymoon, when I saw the weight that I had put on, even though I was able to enjoy it during that time, coming back, the thoughts like, oh, you know, I've got to get this back off again. So I think everyone, if they're kind of honest with themselves, is going to go through that. And I'm sure that's really brave of you to kind of say that online and say that you've kind of learned how to channel them in the right way. And you are keeping the anxiety at bay, which I think is important, as, you know, it's better that than, you know, you say you don't talk to your husband about it, but then you're snappy for the next like 3 days as you're kind of dealing with that. Exactly. But at least you can be honest with him and talk to him about it. So that's really brave. And I'm guessing that a lot of this, when it comes to this, has to be your conscious decision. Like it can't be someone kind of telling you have to stop doing this, or you have to kind of change this. It has to come from your heart, and you have to make that conscious decision. Is that right?
Absolutely. And again, it comes back to the, you know, someone will look at you and say, but you're not fat, so why do you, you know, why would you think that? Or, you know, people say, well, you run, you work out, so of course you can have that, you know. And, you know, this is, I've never really spoken about this part of me. To anyone listening who knows me will probably be really surprised to learn this about me. It's not something I chat with on my Sunday runs with my friends. But you know, when we had talked about this before the interview, I did have a really big heart to heart with my husband. And I said, you know, like, maybe this is relatable in a way, maybe someone out there is listening and they just need to know, like, it doesn't just change overnight. You know, I'm 37 years old, and you know, maybe when I'm 40, I'll even have progressed more. And I think it's just being patient and kind and looking back and saying, yeah, but you know, 15 years ago, look what you were doing. And so you have a little anxiety before you go to a restaurant, but the good news is I'm going to the restaurant. I'm not saying no to my friends. I won't go out. It's not stopping me from enjoying life. It's not stopping me from, you know, engaging in the love of life. And I think most people who know me will know how much I love life and how happy I am. And I'll say I've worked really hard at it. You know, I mean, that's what I think. You know, it's something where I feel like a fighter, at least in the other part of my life, the childhood, which were definitely darker years. And I kind of felt like I, you know, it's like in a hole and you're scratching, you're pulling yourself out of there. And and so some of the residue that might be left behind is some of that disordered thinking around food. But again, I feel like I've got it. You know, there are harder days than others, but I really feel like I'm doing pretty well.
I'd say you're out of that well now. You're just every now and again, a little, zombie will like grab your foot and kind of pull you a little bit, but no, yes. I think it's great that you mentioned that it doesn't ever really go away. And, you know, I do have someone very close to me who did go through that when they were younger. And, I know that I can still see it, in her when, you know, we are around food, that it's still, those thoughts are still there sometimes. But, so I think that's important to kind of mention that, there is no, like, you wake up one day and it's gone. Like, I think as females, or males, actually, I see it a lot with males, especially in the, as a professional runner, I see a lot of people, a lot of males struggle with this too, but it's always going to be there. And it's just kind of, you consciously deciding that, you know, you want to live your life, like you said, and stay positive and stay happy. And, I think your personality is like shone through on this interview, and people are going to really see that it's, you have overcome a lot, but like you said, you know, it's still very much there. And I really am thanking you for sharing that today, because that was very brave. Is there anything that you would say to someone listening who maybe recognizes those symptoms within someone close to them, and what you would recommend that they do to encourage them or to kind of like seek help? Or what would you say?
I would say is the best that they can try not to make it about the food, and make it about, you know, I'm really noticing that you seem sad today, or, you know, you're seeming like more withdrawn. Not, I saw you picking at your food on the plate or not eating it or, you know, saying no to the ice cream. Like, I think it's just try to reach the person inside because that's where the driving force behind those unhealthy behaviors come from. And just, I think that that's what's okay. helped me, you know, is people just reaching out to me as a person and not, because once someone starts to, like, noticing the food, I get very defensive. I don't mean to, it's just sort of like that, you know, I shut down a little bit more versus someone just trying to be real
Absolutely.
With me.
Thank you. That's very helpful. And then what about someone listening who kind of recognizes those thoughts, those maybe the symptoms you described when you were younger, like what would you suggest they should do?
Well, for me, it's hard, but the more you avoid it and try to pretend, like I said, it was a very secretive thing for me for a while, it'll remain a secretive thing until you just, all it takes is one person, I think, to open up to and talk to that one person who's listening, who is not judgmental and who is willing to just to help or to be there for you or maybe guide you to where you need to be to get the help. I think it's opening that silence and taking that risk.
And would you recommend that someone, I mean, obviously it's going to depend on the person, but should it be someone close to you or is it almost easier to talk to someone you don't know, maybe like a counselor?
Yeah. I mean, a counselor, definitely. I've had ones that have been really effective and helpful for me. I've had a few in my life that it just wasn't a good match and I needed to move on. Maybe it'll start with someone reaching out to mm-hmm. someone online, you know, find a support group where you feel like you can still be a little bit more anonymous, but just start to talk about your feelings and your story. And if that's where it begins, and then the next step is finding a therapist who maybe specializes in eating disorders and know how to help. So maybe going a close friend or a family member is too risky or too hard to begin with. So I guess it depends on the person and
no, that's their comfort. Helpful. And actually, I do want to say to anyone listening, you know, you feel free to either email me at tina@runnersconnect.net and I will either pass you on to Julie if you want to talk to her or you're welcome to talk to me. And then I will put some links to some helpful websites on the show notes at runnersconnect.net/RC93. So my next question relating to this is how did running kind of come into play? Were you always a runner? Did that kind of come out of it or what was your background there?
Well, I feel like we need a little bit of a comedy break in here after what I just shared. So when I got engaged with my husband, he goes, "Hey, you know, let's try to get in, you know, even better shape and let's go to the track." And I'm like, "The track?" Like I was a spin instructor for many years. So I did like spinning and like some weightlifting, but running was like not my thing. So I agreed because, you know, I'm a newly engaged and wanted to impress him even more. So he takes me to this track and I'm all like geared up or ready to go. I made it about halfway around the track and I got this like crazy back spasm and I like kind of fell to the ground. And like, of course he ran over, but he just started laughing. And I was like, "This sucks." I go, "I'm not running anymore." So I think I like walked a little bit while he did some running. So that was kind of like the first time I really gave it a try. And I was a little disheartened. And then we got a dog soon after. And to get her some exercise, I started taking her in the trails. And I saw people running in the trails. And I was like, "Well, I'll give that a try." And we did. I would take her a few times a week. And it was before I had a Garmin or I knew how far the time. And we just ran and ran and ran. Wow. And I'd be like, "Oh, that was probably about 40 minutes. And then a friend from high school said, "You know, you should do this race." And she said it was a 5-mile race. I was like, "I've never run 5 miles. There's no way." So we went and I brought my husband and my only goal was to beat him. So we did. We ran and I ended up running like an 8-minute pace. I don't even know. I wasn't even, I know for an elite runner, pace. No, but I remember finishing and I beat Eric like maybe by 15 seconds. And I didn't know what a 8-minute pace, if it was good or not. But I just remember thinking, "Oh my God, I beat my husband. That's awesome." So that was the start of the running bug, was mm-hmm. just that high, that very first race. And from there, I mean, it was the half marathon into the marathons and, you know, it just, and now I'm obsessed. I love it.
Sounds pretty similar to a lot of people in the way that you hated it. And then slowly it like got you in. And actually, You say that, but yeah, a lot of the time, you know, I run a lot slower, especially on my easy days, than people realize I do. And the first time when I was in school and I was told to do a tryout for the cross country team, I hid in the bathroom so I didn't have to run. So I didn't exactly start as a keen runner either. I didn't want anything to do with it. So not as fairy tale like as you would think. So then, right. Yeah, if you could kind of share with us about, so this was after you'd kind of moved on with the eating disorder. So you'd already kind of let go. You weren't using it as like a tool to keep the calories off at this point.
I mean, I knew it was an efficient way of burning calories. And I think actually they kind of came hand in hand. I had really gotten more of a handle on things a little bit before I met my husband. So that was about 12 years ago. And, you know, he and I, we just have a wonderful relationship. Mm-hmm. I feel so blessed. And I've always been open and honest with him. And he knew that this was an area of weakness for me. And, you know, he was not an enabler by any way, but he was very supportive. So the running just sort of, it just became like the therapy. It like really was more effective than, you know, going to a therapist. I just felt like more, like I really loved and appreciated my body. I also, that competitive edge that I soon began to develop was, well, if I want to run and I want to run well, I can't be doing that other stuff. It's going to like, you know, sabotage me. So it was sort of like I needed to really change it and say, well, I need to fuel myself. I need to feed myself. I need to take care of myself because I want to be fast and I want to do well and I want to keep this up for life. So those things just kind of like really beautifully kind of came together and I just embraced it. And I think, you know, not that marriage and love solves problems, but it was just like my life. I felt like the clouds went away and the sun opened, you know, came out. And I know it sounds so corny, but it really was like, I found this amazing guy who, you know, we just had our 10th anniversary and, you know, love him more than anything. And it's just, you know, we have these two beautiful kids and this really wonderful life. And I just think I'm in a place where I feel so grateful and gracious and fortunate. And so that is sort of been part of the, you know, the healing is that I'm so grateful for what I have in my life. It's like, I don't need those. Those are my coping skills now. I have resilience, I have strength, and the running really is my power. And I don't have to be the best or the fastest, but you know, I really, it inspires me and fuels me.
Yeah, that is absolutely beautiful. And what a way of putting it right there. I absolutely love that, what you just said. And that's just amazing. And correct me if I'm wrong here, but I have a feeling that you met your husband probably at a time when you finally started to love who you were. Like you said, you found the inner beauty of yourself. And, you know, I've often told people that when they're, you know, not that I'm the mighty wise one, because, you know, I haven't been married very long, but I kind of feel like people find someone when they finally appreciate who they are and, like you said, are grateful for who they are and what they have to offer the world. Did that kind of line up, or was it?
I do. I think I was ready. I was ready for him. And when we met, I mean, I literally went home and I was like, that's the one. I'm going to marry him. Thank God he felt the same way.
Of course he did.
But we got married, I think it was 8 months later, like after 8 or 10 months later, or engaged 8 months later after we met, and married a year after that. And so things just really clicked. It was
that's great.
It was
awesome. Thank you so much for sharing. And what is next for you with your running and life, I guess?
Yeah, so I've signed up to run the Maine Coast Marathon in May, but I actually want to be a pacer. I've decided I want a new challenge, so I've applied for that. So if they're listening, I just think it would be a wonderful opportunity to run with a group of people and take them to reach their goal. And then after that, I'm going to try to go for a BQ time in the following October.
Great, fantastic. And actually, it's funny you mentioned about pacing. Actually, in last week's interview with Coach Jamie Dodge, she talked about how great pacing is for runners. And if anyone hasn't checked that out, make sure you do at runnersconnect.net/RC92. So I just have a few more questions for you in our final kick round, which is firstly, what is the greatest advice you've ever received?
I would say someone probably just saying to me, you've got this. Don't underestimate your stuff. You've got this. You know, you do the training, you know, do what you have to do, but you've got this. Just you go for it.
Believe. So. Yep, that's great. Believe in your, you know, your own abilities. Okay, favorite running book or blog?
I'm a huge fan of Matt Fitzgerald.
Okay, as everyone is.
I know, right? Diet Cults book was really spoke a lot to me, and especially, you know, after speaking about the eating issues, I feel like that was very liberating, mm-hmm. was to just, you know, be mindful, but you don't have to be so strict.
Absolutely. Matt is just amazing. We actually have 3 interviews with Matt, so I'll put a link to those in the show notes. And I've been reading Matt's latest book, How Bad Do You Want It? And it's absolutely fantastic. It's a really good book. So I'll put a link to that on the show notes as well. What would you tell a new runner?
I would tell them to try to find a local run club. The Exeter Run Club that I'm part of have become some of my closest friends, and talk about like getting out there on a cold, rainy, or whatever type of day. They're there waiting for you, and wonderful way to make friends and stay motivated.
Absolutely. Great. Yeah, that's very good advice there, and very helpful. We'll keep people on track, especially in those early stages. Favorite pre-race meal?
I usually do white rice and like grilled chicken, no fiber.
Is that the night before or that's the morning of?
Sorry, the night before. The morning of, I'll do a bagel, banana, peanut butter, and applesauce.
Okay, applesauce. Interesting. Haven't had that one before.
Matt Fitzgerald recommends that.
Okay. I didn't remember that one, but that's good. Thank you for sharing. And finally, your favorite running product.
Okay, so I just bought the Tracer 360. Oh, do you know what that is?
No, I do not. Please share.
Because the 95% of my runs are in the dark, it is the most lightweight reflector gear that snaps on, and I swear that aliens from Mars could see you. It's amazing and super lightweight, and just I feel very safe and visible with that on. And I saw someone else wearing it, and I love it.
Great. Okay, thank you. That keeps you safe, and that's very important, especially to those people who are early risers like you are. Well, Julie, that has been a great interview and so much inspiration there. And just thank you so much for sharing your heart and bearing your soul to us. That really was brave of you and just wonderful to hear. So thank you for your time. And I appreciate everything that you've shared with us today.
Thank you, Tina. I appreciate you having me.
Isn't she a sweetheart? What a caring, honest, and just wonderful person. Both Julie and I would be happy to talk to anyone about either of the topics we talked about today. So please, if you want to, reach out to us. We'd be happy to talk. If you did enjoy this episode, I would ask you to please consider leaving a review about the podcast on iTunes. I give you all the instructions you need of how to do this, along with other podcast-related information at the new podcast page, which is runnersconnect.net/run-to-the-top. Oh, and I also want to thank you for all the emails that you have sent to me about how you enjoyed the 2016 update episode. As I mentioned in that episode, I was really nervous about it going out. I wasn't sure whether, you know, people would be even interested in learning about what I was up to, but I've had so many wonderful emails and you just made me really happy. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much for that. Next week, I'm going to be talking to Ben Greenfield, who is one of the industry power players and someone who loves the science behind our sport. If you enjoy trying to become the absolute best runner you can be, this is going to be an episode for you. So until then, have a great week.